Hello. I will start with my presentation. So hello, I'm Joseph. I am a teacher at a course called Experimental Publishing in Rotterdam. And we focus there with our students to work with free software and open source software and expose them as a media design students to the domain of working with code. And them its own like materiality. This institution where I'm part of this course is also part of a bigger institution. So it's like this course is part of an institution called Pietzwart Institute. And this institute is part of an academy called Willem de Koning Academy. And this academy is part even of a larger institution called Hochschule Rotterdam, Fachhochschule, you say here in Germany. And so the University of Applied Arts, Rotterdam. And this huge institution has a printing system. And as you know, such a printing system always comes nowadays with subscription models, similar to what we know with software as a service. It's canon, and management decision says, like, okay, we need to renew everything, and here you see these printers that, like with an intervention by one of our students, shortly before they disappeared. And when we come to organizations, we can say like this proposition, the larger an entity is, the more complex is its printing system, and the less certain it is that the print job will be done as intended. And this is something for like media design students, like very crucial, and sometimes they are like, yeah, quite annoyed by the situations with the printing system, like a big cloud system, somewhere you upload a PDF, it goes maybe, you don't know, to which data center and so on, and then it arrives physically somewhere in the printer. The second proposition is, the more complex a printing system is, the less configuration options are available for a print. So it speaks a bit against Aristoteles that you say the whole is less than the sum of its parts. And you find also like then on the meme account of the academy, cultural expressions like that they are really not fan of the new system and that there are even less configuration options and certain functions just disappear. And this one I found in, this is on the streets of Rotterdam in Strevelsweg on the 1st of December, and this is like when you see like the ultimate extreme form of aggression against frustration with printing systems. So because of these prepositions and observations, and of several other reasons, me and my colleague, Manetta Behrens, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, thought, how about to get rid of this software stack what we normally use to work with and just focusing on really writing the languages that the printers speak, or historical printing devices, to write this handwritten, like as a form of crafts, where you are like in your atelier as a like sculptor and painter, and you write everything by code, and a little bit like romanticized. My colleague, Manetta Behrens, focused in her classes on PostScript for printers, so the page description language, and on the specific commands for dot matrix printers, and I focused on HPGL, so this is from 70s, 80s, a language by HP for the pen plotters. PostScript. So always when you learn a new language, you, of course, get a book to get familiar. And in the case of PostScript, it's the red, the green, and the blue book. And you start to study these books. And on page 20, in chapter number 3, in the blue book, you find the following example. New path, move to, then this line, another line, another line. You close the path, you set the line width, a stroke, show page, and finally, you have a square. Students started to read these books and started to collaborate and make a small screen. Interestingly, like from a cultural observation, the 80s, the time of the fractals, like Benoit Mandelbrot, trees everywhere in these books, these examples, you could find everything. And students ask, like, why fractals? Why would you want this culture? And another thing is like the slowest graphic design ever that one student wrote. Or how many attempts it took to create a certain page? 15 attempts, 7 attempts, and more. And last page, PostScript gives me a headache, it says here. One student went then quite far and tried to glitch as much as possible the existing PostScript forms, yes. With the dot matrix printers, it's a little bit different because each printer works differently. So you don't have actually a book that you could look up, but you had to study each operation manual. Remember, dot matrix printers, this were these printers with a pinhead, with a solenoid behind it, and when you send the commands to it, the solenoids were hammering against the ink ribbon and left the ink trace on the paper. It's actually really easy and nice to use because you can just echo to the printer directly, a line printer, and it mostly actually works. There are nowadays some difficulties with, like, when you use a USB to parallel dongle, that certain older printers from, like, really early generations don't work. What has to do then with this? That it's not using like a typical FTDI chip, it's more like then different forms of chip, and that certain functions, hardware sites, are not implemented. And then you need to use an older USB dongle to make it work. Students work together on a dragon scene. And here, the other example, and one student group. They had a look in one of their thematic projects, a seminar that they did on the topic of CSS, on the whole conversation since the late 90s on CSS in the W3C working group, and layouted this for the Dutch matrix printer and spent the whole afternoon to print 300-400 pages. The HPGL, Hewlett Packard Graphic Language, was from the late 70s to then 80s, early 90s, used for pen plotters. So before the Yaxi draw, there were, of course, already pen plotters, were used for technical drawings, but mostly when you look at the advertisement, it was advertised for business purpose, to make like nice bar charts and so on. And interestingly, when I searched books to study it, I found a book from Germany. It's about how to build yourself a Mondrian HPGL plotter. And even with the code examples inside, we didn't went so far to actually build this type of plotter by ourselves. In the language itself is really easy. You write the IN command to initialize something, SP for select pen and the pen number of it, PU for pen up and the coordinates, PD for pen down and the coordinates, LT, the pattern number with the pattern length, so which line type you use, then a fill type, and then, for example, you could use a relative rectangular or also a rectangular absolute to its current coordination. Interfacing on old pen plotters is more difficult because these HP plotters use the parallel connector DB25 pins, and had a specific configuration. We created for this a small adapter to make it more easy and to connect this. Unfortunately, here it starts to get more difficult because the pen plotters send like a back command when they are busy or the buffer is full. The buffer for such an old pen plotter is around, most of the time, 512 bytes, so it's quickly full, and then you need to wait. And especially like from then, like OS X makes a lot of haggage that you Because I think they changed recently something with the USB space, and it's quite difficult. And it took a while until we figured out that how to limit the commands we send to there. You start, of course, by testing, sending commands directly before you go to something complex. And then you write quickly a Python script with two loops, one for x and y, and you generate a grid with different patterns in each of the squares inside the rectangulars and the different line types, and you just let it print. The nice thing to work with HPGL is that with all the commands outside of PU and PD, so pen up and pen down, is that, as far as I know, there is no software renderer for this. So you need to plot the things on the plotter to actually see how it looks. My tests with different software that can import HPGL as a like vector format, I had some problems and I couldn't see like a line type for a rectangular and so on. PU, PD for pen up and down as coordinates work fine, but the other things not. And then you can quickly come to like kind of complex patterns. When we did this as class, students immediately said, oh wow, that's really interesting. This could be almost like a graphical notation system for a musical purpose or like rhythms that you have all these patterns there. And it took like only some minutes until they connected it to a speaker with a microphone and to see how it actually sounds if you generate all these different patterns. You ask yourself, why do we have so many old pen plotters at the institution? How does this come? And how is it possible that they all work? There were a lot of pen plotters institutions, but they were just broken. And last year, with this mysterious group, we repaired them all. They are called the Pen Plotting Party. And they brought pen plotting with these old devices to a new level. Look at this kind of hatching algorithm what they developed with different pens. So they are now bootlegging different film posters or album covers. Thijs van Leeuwenhoek from them. Or he is also working at the moment at a 3D pen plotted movie. The first 3D pen plotted movie on such an old device. It brings new dimension, that this is finally possible. And Victor of them, he is working on different horse scenes and found his own unique style. They even started to make an ice cream assembly line where you can get like different configurations of ice cream inside and have a lot of different flavors. Yes, reimagination. Now I need to look up what I want to say. Yes, so is this a starting point for reimagination to work with such old devices? Indeed, it is interesting and quite a challenge, as you have seen, for students, and you learn something about the history of all your devices, and you can make conclusions how this is connected. And at the same time, you maybe start to learn to think about your relation with your devices and tools, what is, I think, important here. As a form of like playing an instrument. You have several attempts and you practice and you practice and you go on and you find your own unique style. However, as a teacher, I always have the feeling that I'm falling here in a, like a trap of melancholia. The printing system of the academy, or like the big institution, is quite complicated, but then I go up back to this maybe simplified devices. And I think it has to do with a kind of form of melancholia that could be understood in the very recent form of the Promethean shame by Günther Anders and his philosophy, as he defined in 1975 that so it's not the lack of capability that we lack, but the lack of ability, so that we don't have actually the possibilities to change the structure itself. In German, it's called like nicht an Können fehlt es uns also, sondern an nicht Können. We cannot change somehow this current system, what we have here, with the printers. Here you see the new printer that, through the service contract, came in the huge institution, and even now with less functions. And that's the pity somehow, yes, that we, with our melancholia, are able to change this. However, recently, I went to a student's exhibition of the Fematic project, and I found these prints on fabrics, on textile. And I was really curious, how did they did this? You know, you could do it with silk screening or specialized UV printers. Here are different projects that the students did. And I was really interested what was the technique behind. And they said, yeah, it's actually really easy. You take the fabric and duct tape it to paper. And then you go to the Academy's printer and say it's really heavy, so that the paper jamming sensor is not really recognizing anything. You feed it in, you print, you get it out, and you print it on the paper. And this is really interesting for me to observe, because I think here is the starting point of a new printer operator that doesn't fall into the melancholia, but focuses more on the means of productions that are available and modifies them and abuses them to their own use and appropriates them. Yes. Thank you. There's tomorrow a workshop where I have, I brought this circuit board with me, so you can print easily from just the microcontroller directly to dot matrix printers and to use them, for example, as a game engine or something. And I also brought a joystick, because Penblotter's old one you can actually also use from as a game engine, so we can play tomorrow Pensnake or Pentron. Yes, yes.
Thank you very much. We got questions. I don't have to ask. I have already one.
I'm pretty sure everybody knows it here, but I would really like to say that the free software movement started with a broken printer.
Okay, that was more like a comment. There's another question.
Also more like a comment. I appreciate the irregular shapes and the design on the PCBs.
Oops. Okay, more questions? There's another question.
How do you deal with ink? Do you have any tricks or tips there? Or special hacks you came up with? Like for the plotters, especially.
For the plotters.
But also for the dot matrix, it's kind of.
For the plotters, we have on our wiki documented quite a lot of things what we did. The nice thing about the pen plotters was that they were actually quite mass produced, so a lot of people still use them nowadays, and you find a lot of hacks online, how for modifications, even if it comes to certain 3D printed parts, there are certain mechanisms that break quite often or more often, and you find the 3D files for it to reprint them. It's on our wiki. There's also a scene that is based on the wiki. I brought them and can show them tomorrow, where all these things are documented. Yes.
I have an institutional question, because we work at the same institution.
Yes.
What is it in the choice to not make use of the specialized printing infrastructure within the academy? I mean, I love this.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, but what's the motivation behind choosing to engage with those commodity printers instead of the good stuff?
I think it's financial, because the students can print cheaper on these ones than the specialized printers what they have in the workshop for it. Yes. And I think, of course, it is always the challenge, because if you ask this as students, they always say, challenge accepted. Yes.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, then, thank you very much. That was awesome.